This is Climate Justice Radio. Hi, folks, and welcome to Climate Justice Radio, Climate Justice Toronto's brand new podcast. Climate Justice Toronto is a grassroots group of young people across the Greater Toronto Area committed to building a powerful, irresistible movement to stop the climate crisis by confronting its root causes – capitalism, colonialism, and white supremacy. This is our very first Climate Justice Radio episode, which means you are our very first listeners. Welcome! What can you expect from Climate Justice Radio? This podcast will cover a wide range of issues connected to climate justice, everything from how to get involved, like this episode will cover, to climate anxiety and solidarities across movements. Our goal is to engage you, our Climate Justice Radio listeners, in the co-creation of a climate justice movement that is playful, accessible, and intersectional. We'll be highlighting local stories of organizing, art making, and community building. I'm your host, Alexandra Simpson, for this episode. Before we get into today's episode, we want to mention that we are recording these interviews over Zoom with our phones and the phones of our guests, so we apologize if the sound quality is a little questionable at times. We hope to remedy this in the future when we can meet in person with our guests once again. On today's episode, we're going to introduce you to CJTO by taking an in-depth look at our main principles, objectives, why these are important to climate justice, and how you can get involved with CJTO. Joining me today is CJTO member and organizer in the CJTO orientation group, Nicholas Argawal. Did I say that correctly, Nicholas?
Yep.
Okay, great. Nice to be here. Nicholas, do you want to tell us your pronouns and maybe what you've been working on in CJTO?
Sure. So hi, everyone. My name is Nicholas. I use he, him pronouns. I feel like kind of dabbling all over the place. But I think kind of my main homes are the structure committee, orientation, and also data finance stuff.
Cool. Well, before we get into what CJTO is all about, we want to begin with the land story. And at CJTO, we have members prepare land stories at the beginning of our general meetings. And we'll be doing this today for Climate Justice Radio as well. So how we do land stories is different from the typical checkbox style land acknowledgements. CJTO's land stories aim to have members understand their history and relationship with the land and encourage other members to reflect on how our work can support Indigenous folks in Tikaronto as well. So Nicholas has graciously agreed to do our land story for today. And Nicholas, I'll pass it on to you.
Thanks, Alex. One other kind of preamble I actually want to say is that I think it's kind of interesting, like, Alex, you and I are recording this over Zoom during the COVID-19 pandemic, and I think thinking about kind of the digital space as a way of also situating this, because we are operating digitally, and folks will be listening to this podcast on whatever device they use, but kind of thinking that stolen land is still kind of really incorporated with this in terms of the infrastructure required to really operate our meeting, this recording, and that like servers and data centers and internet towers rely on exploited land and labor all around Turtle Island and beyond. And I think my own specific migration story to Turtle Island is quite complex in some ways. I'm mixed race of Indian and German descent. And so my dad is from the South Asian continent, specifically within the region of the Punjab, and grew up in a city called Bombay or Mumbai, as it's now known. And I was always kind of like really confused about why that happened. And it wasn't until I heard another scholar or an activist from the West Coast, Harsha Walia, speak about this, who talked about the Green Revolution and how that kind of came to India. And Green Revolution, not in terms of environmentalism, but in terms of industrial agriculture. And I'm still learning a lot about that, but as kind of Western institutions such as like the IMF and other organizations like that brought agrarian technology to India, they really kind of like exploited the land and really kind of like caused an ecological and economic disaster in specifically the Punjab region, which was like the breadbasket of the South Asian continent. And so that forced millions of Punjabis to immigrate, many to Canada, but also internally within India. And so it's interesting to me that like my ancestry is coming kind of like from this diasporic origin, even within the continent. But like that's kind of as much connection that my dad has to his history. It's like, oh yeah, we're from this region. And then when you kind of think about why is that the way it is, a lot of it is due to actually the colonization of India and the South Asian continent by the British, and how kind of the partition of Punjab when after the Indian independence really kind of separated families and lineage and kind of really broke like ancestral knowledge. So like I think as an organizer with Climate Justice Toronto, we really talk about like Indigenous sovereignty and solidarity, and like those same like the British and that same kind of idea of like dividing land and drawing lines on a map in arbitrary ways was what happened here as well. And so that's kind of one side of my life. And then on the other side of my life, I come from of European German descent. One really kind of like heinous thing that came out of the World War II era was the eugenics program, which really sought a way to classify humans based on really arbitrary things like skull size and kind of other kind of really false characteristics. And then after World War II, when the Nazis were defeated, you know, the eugenics program still has lived on. And eugenics have like gone all around the world and kind of have embedded themselves within institutions. And even a lot of the Nazis' ideas around eugenics were inspired by the British and their actual experiments on indigenous children in the residential school system. So just another link that is like just really horrific to think about, but is within kind of my own identity. And so I have this interesting tension of being like part colonized, but also part of the colonizers, but then also like nuance to each of that. Because, for example, my dad used to teach me how the British used like the divide and conquer idea to kind of rule India and use that mentality. But then so much of that has actually been embodied within my own community. There's like a really kind of colonized thinking that happens where like colorism and then anti-Black racism is really prevalent in the Indigenous community around your skin tone and kind of your intelligence and also caste as part of that. And so like my same father who taught me about like how the British were so bad and how they did divide and conquer is also a big fan of the current fascist in power in India, Modi, who is using like Hindu-Muslim tension to really increase capitalist production within the country. It really makes me think about how colonization is so embodied and kind of happens within communities and how kind of hurt and broken a lot of people are. And it's part of the reason why I'm an organizer is to really kind of like help change that and kind of build people's power. And so that kind of extends into my climate organizing, which is the main work that I do, which is to kind of like really peek behind the curtain of really the climate crisis and really kind of expose what is happening. With that all being said around like my history, like this is how I come to this land. I've grown up here my entire life and I've really kind of founded a home. And I think there's so much more to be unpacked, specifically around people of color, how a lot of us like have families who have like fled warfare or have like fled violence. And then we're like taught that Canada is like this safe country where it's like meant for us to be here. This is like our chance for a new home. And like, we have to be really grateful to the state. And so a lot of that unpacking is to really hold that truth, which is like, yes, this is our new home, but also this is like really based on the exploitation of Indigenous and Black people. And so to end, I want to list some of the nations that land is I'm currently occupying and kind of pay my respect to that. So I want to acknowledge and honor that Toronto or Tokoronto is on the territory of the Anishinaabe, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, the Wyandot, Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, and many other nations recorded and unrecorded who have title and have taken care of this land. So I want to acknowledge the current treaty holders, the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation. This territory is subject to the Dish With One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant Agreement, which is an agreement between the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee that binds them to peacefully share and care for the Great Lakes region. As settlers, we come to this land by Treaty 13, also known as the Toronto Purchase, between the Crown and Mississaugas, a very flawed and unfair treaty process. And so as a kind of final note, I just want to say that this is a reminder that we are all treaty people and we seek to uphold other covenants such as the two-row wampum belt and covenant chain agreements.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Nicholas. That was a fantastic land story and a really good reminder of how understanding our own complex histories can help us understand the complex interwoven oppressions that still exist today. And I think is a really great reminder that we need to keep working and keep understanding these histories. So I think that was fantastic. Thank you so much. If folks are new and they're just maybe for the first time starting to think about their own land story, what might be a good place to start?
That's a great question. So we actually have a resource. So my first thing would be message us on Instagram to get that resource. But basically, you want to kind of really think about your own story of how you got to this land and really kind of like unpack it, because part of it is like part of honoring like your truth and kind of like acknowledging like who you are and being open to that. Part of it is like protocol, like some Indigenous nations, like the proper protocol when you are entering a new territory is to like say who you are, who your family members are, and kind of like that as well. And so those would be my two things. I think there's a lot of resources kind of coming out nowadays that are kind of provoking this like rethinking of a land story. So look at people like Hayden King, people like Eve Tuck for some additional things.
That's great. So let's dive in now to what CJTO is all about. And I wonder if we can just start at a really basic explanation. What is CJTO?
CJTO is a youth movement dedicated to fighting the climate crisis by addressing its root causes of colonialism, capitalism, and white supremacy.
And what are some of the ways that CJTO does that?
Yeah, so we do that through a variety of ways. And I think as our group has evolved, we've kind of tested different things and kind of have tried different things. And really, I would say are really kind of still trying to figure out like what exactly our theory of change is. I think it really kind of depends on the current political moment and what is important. But I think kind of encompassing all of it is the idea of like creating a mass movement. The idea is that we don't want to just be a group of 10 people. We want to be something that is really attracting a lot of people to our community and is really kind of creating like mass change, and kind of really through a decentralized approach that makes you can start your own, join us and you start your own thing, and you can do, if there's energy, you can start organizing around it as long as it kind of aligns with us politically. But you know, we've done things around the 2019 federal election, running candidates that we thought had a chance to really kind of make a difference and adopt a platform of a Green New Deal. We held, as part of that, we held a sit-in at the CBC and held protests at other broadcasters demanding a debate on the climate crisis in the federal election. Several times we did that. We did solidarity action for Indigenous folks, so for the Wet'suwet'en crisis that is still ongoing, but was really escalating this time last year. And we've also recently been doing a lot of mutual aid and fundraising. And so over the summer, I think we've raised around $30,000 for different initiatives, such as a Frontline Gratitude Fund, and then also a Black and Indigenous Solidarity Fund. As a group of people who, you know, to be frank, a lot of us, this is not necessarily like who we want to be, but the reality is that a lot of us are people who have gone through the formal education system. And a lot of us do have like, we ourselves or may have connections to people who have monetary resources that are like actually can be able to redistribute some of their wealth. And so that's kind of what we have been focusing on, especially during COVID, as we haven't been able to organize in person as much. But, you know, like I said, like it's, I think really the movement is really kind of like up to you. And I think depending on what the current ideas are interested in and kind of and what and who's in it, the group kind of really evolves to kind of meet those ideas.
That's great. And I think that's something that's so true is it really does feel like CJTO is constantly evolving and reacting is maybe a bad word, but bringing itself to issues that are in the moment and need to be addressed. And then the other thing I want to bring up is you said that CJTO is a youth-led movement. And I'm wondering if you could speak about the importance of a youth-led climate justice organization.
This is great and one of my favorite questions. I'm really happy you asked me that. When you think of it very superficially, it can seem like oddly disclusionary. You're like, why is it youth-led? Like, even as a young person, you're like, like, I thought we were trying to create a mass movement here. Like, why are we just young people? Like, like, shouldn't we really kind of be focusing on, like, everyone? I was actually talking about this recently with Upping the Ante. There's an article coming out soon with a few CGTO members who are interviewed there as well. But I think there's kind of two reasons why we really kind of make that distinction. One is for a strategic move. And this is something actually, to be honest, I don't think was super strategic in the beginning, but it's something as I've learned more about organizing, I've reflected on, like, hey, that's actually very strategic. And it's the idea that young people actually have been at the forefront of social movements for most of history and revolutions. And I think there's someone on Instagram and / in real life who's a friend of mine and a really kind of comrade of CJTO's, Cricket Guest. And she posted recently on her Instagram about how the Black Panther movement, like how Angela Davis and all these people were like in their early 20s when this was happening. And I think that really was just like, whoa, like, yeah, like young people are the ones kind of being these kind of leaders of the movement. And even as a young person, I didn't even know that. And that was like, that was really inspiring even to me. So I think there's kind of like that aspect of it as well, is that we are often like the kind of temperature check of like of where society is moving. Another kind of aspect of the strategic point of that is that we also, as kind of like having youthful faces and youthful personalities, the society really values youth. And so like when a bunch of youth make trouble, you often get headlines, you often get attention, because it's like, it really kind of plays into like something that I think Western society is really into, maybe like not for good reasons, like maybe like we should really embrace all age, but like young people are really valued and seen as kind of like pure and kind of naive. And so to be taking a strong stand really kind of like, I think, buckles the establishment a little, and they get kind of shaken up when that happens. And then the other kind of side beyond strategy is that I think that as people, when the original kind of founders of CJTO were kind of people, including myself, who maybe have dabbled in kind of some environmental work or some other kind of activism work, and found that spaces that we had been in before that were not always the most welcome to younger voices, and kind of were dismissive or kind of hostile or kind of, or even really unorganized. I think there is kind of something about being organized I find that CGTO is quite good at. And I think just like basic things like Google Drives and these kind of things. And so a part of it was kind of this kind of like wanting to create a space where we could really feel like we could be heard and really could organize to like our strongest potential. And then the main part of it is really the strategic elements of our youthfulness.
That's great. That's so many great points in there. Yeah. And it definitely is a very particular space. Like if you ever come to a CJTO meeting, there's just such a respectful environment that's created by everyone in there, and really just being very conscious and aware of the amount of space you're taking up, and making sure that the mic is being shared. And I think it is a very, you know, particular to CJTO that environment's being created quite well.
Totally. And I really don't want to hate on older people, because I think there's like so much to learn, and like we really do need everyone in this. But yeah, like how many times as a young person have been in a meeting and you're like trying to talk and an older person is like just dominating the conversation, you can't get a single word in, and you're just like kind of leave feeling really weird about that. And I think you really nailed it. It was like we wanted to really create a space that was like welcoming and that everyone got a chance to speak, because it feels really almost like demoralizing to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to ask you if you could talk about some of CJTO's main principles and maybe talk a little bit about why they're important or what CJTO is thinking about at this moment in terms of principles.
Sure, that's a great question. And I'm really happy you brought that up, because I think that something we think, sometimes I think about a lot with one of my friends, Cricket, is that CJTO, especially I think during the pandemic, has been really digital focused, and kind of, I think there is this thing that can maybe come across that like we are like this like glamorous, 100% put together organization. And like, I think there's like a danger to that, because then there's like so much expectations that get put onto it. And it's like, hey, actually, we're still really figuring things out. And so I think actually the principles is a really good question, where it's like, yeah, that's a great question. What are principles? I have some ideas, but we actually are in the process of really kind of formalizing those and kind of naming them. And it's so important, because like, how are you going to bring someone to a new movement and be like, hey, would you like to do this work with us? but we don't really have principles that align us, right? So it was one of the first gaps that was kind of, as our evolution of our group, we like started, what's the saying? We started kind of like all guns blazing, like it just like went going. And then kind of around October, November 2019, it was like, like maybe we should try to build some of this, this kind of like identity that we have. And so the principles have kind of been a work in progress. And I think that as we've been really focused on our structure, and our structure process is kind of coming to a hopeful close within the next few months. And I think then hopefully the principals will be able to really kind of focus on that, because I think that is a really critical point. But that is not to say we are principal-less. I definitely have some things I can talk about. So one, I think, is some political principles that are really important is, number one, like Indigenous solidarity. I think that Indigenous folks are on the front lines of the climate crisis. They're the ones who are actually really doing a lot of the grassroots front work, standing up to the Canadian state and corporations, to name a few, like Wet'suwet'en, Tiny House Warriors, 1492 Land Back Lane, Mi'kmaq War, Resistance Out East. And this is not even in Canada-wide, this is globally, right? And so if we're really going to be fighting for climate justice, it needs to fight for Indigenous sovereignty and rights and like control of the land. And so that is why I think that's a really grounding principle. Another one I would say that, to be honest, was something that came later for CJTO, and has been something that really was a really big learning moment, and kind of something that kind of made us really have to reflect is the principle around like abolition Our principle is abolition, and also we are anti-black racism, because I think to say that we're anti-racist, it is fine, but we also want to name that we are like specifically trying to denounce like anti-black racism. And I think that as like something that folks can look at, CJTO did a really great post about why we're abolitionists on our Instagram. It's quite beautiful, and I can't really go into all the details of it right now, but essentially this idea that like the carceral state, like the state that imprisons people, it also quite literally imprisons our imagination, it imprisons the earth, it imprisons so many things, and really controls so much, so aspects of society, that really to like have climate justice means an end to all prisons as well. And so I think that is a kind of a new principle that we've really been focusing on. And then a few other kind of things are principles around migrant justice, so supporting the end of all borders, supporting free movement of people. You know, the climate crisis disproportionately affects people in the global south. So how is it fair to then say, sorry, you can't come to Canada, you can't have access to jobs here? Like, there's a lot of injustice in that. Disability justice, this is also something that has really been kind of provoked by members within CJTO, and really grateful for that. The idea that your organizing needs to really match the pace of disabled folks and kind of folks of all different abilities, because how are you going to create a society that leaves people behind in another way? And then obviously being anti-capitalist is a really, really huge and important one. And sorry, I could talk forever. I think a few kind of ones that are like beyond politics, but are also quite political, is actually the idea of like a future beyond survival, and this idea that like we can actually have a society that is beautiful and healing and can be good for us. I think that's why we really kind of like sing in our meetings and have like, and try to make them fun and make the organizing fun, because when you're doing this work, when you're like anti this, anti that, it can be quite draining, right? You're constantly fighting. And so if we ourselves are not creating an environment that feels uplifting, then what's the point of the work? Because we want to move eventually into a society that is happy and that is good for people. And so I think we try to embody that within our own organizing.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And it's so important to know what you're against, but also know what you're working for. And I think that, as you said, kind of helps keeps the momentum going and events burn out from people. I wonder if you could speak to, so, you know, climate justice is in the name. And so you've already kind of touched on a little bit, but why do you think it's important for climate justice activists to also think about things like racial justice, abolition, worker rights, disability justice? Why are these things important as well? It's a big question, but...
It's a big question, but I don't think I'll ever get tired answering it, right? Because I think it's so important. And there's like so many different ways you can approach this, but one thing that I've really personally been interested in unions lately, and the labor movement is kind of a field of interest of my own, just because I think it's quite misunderstood on the left, especially for environmentalists. But, you know, in unions, they often say things like a harm against one worker is a harm against all, you know, solidarity forever, because it's very true. Like the idea that you're harming one worker means that you've harmed the entire union. And so I think when you think about like, why is it important to talk about racism? Why is it important to talk about migrants? Why is it important to talk about abolition? Why is it important to talk about workers? It's because literally a harm against one is a harm against all. Like we are all battling these same economic, political, social systems. And so if we are united in our causes, we are actually building our power like as strong as it can be, right? Because that means like if I'm showing up for labor, that means that when I'm in trouble, labor will be showing up for me. And I think that is kind of, so from like a strategic point, it's very important in that way. And then another part of it is kind of like this understanding climate change as like an actual issue. Because it's not very a clear issue like, for example, environmental issues of the past. And Naomi Klein talks a lot about this, like for example, like the ozone layer, like how that was like quite like unified, like ban aerosol, some UN maneuvering, and like that was kind of done. I know, is this still an issue? I don't really know. But the climate change is such like a interconnected issue, right? It's like the causes are diverse, the effects are diverse. And so you really see climate change embedded in everything. Climate change is a racist thing, and it is caused by people who are predominantly from the global north, who are European or European descent. It affects predominantly Black and Brown people all around the world. It is a capitalist issue because it is like caused by our economic system that knows no end and that exploits people. It is a migrant issue because migrants are the ones who are dispersed by capitalism and then are then forced to like work for industries that cause climate change. It's an abolition issue because people in prisons are dying because they don't have air conditioning because it's like too hot in the prison, and because those are like very specific things. And then kind of on a theoretical level, it's this like same idea unites them all, of people being disposable, the planet being disposable. It's all very, very connected. And so that's why it's climate justice as a principle is incredibly important.
That's so great. Yeah, thank you for taking us through that, because it's so important to make those connections in movement building and for folks to understand.
You're listening to Climate Justice Radio, a podcast hosted by Climate Justice Toronto. We are building an irresistible movement to confront the climate crisis by addressing its root causes: capitalism, colonialism, and white supremacy.
So, my next question for you is, what are some examples of successful activism that CJTO has worked with or supported or done in the past?
One of the earliest things we did, which I'm like really proud of, was something called the Summer Convergence, which isn't necessarily activism in the sense of like a direct action or like a rally or something that we were doing. It was our second kind of really big gathering, and we kind of really modeled it off of a conference that a lot of us had met and kind of wanted to do like a mini version of that. So really kind of focusing on attracting like a wide audience to it, then having like learning games, trainings as part of it, and then really building people's capacity as organizers. And we held it in Christy Pitts in, I believe it was July 2019. And when I look back at that event, I'm kind of like shocked that we organized it, because so many of us, like, it was also just like a really, really busy month. Like me, like a bunch of us had traveled during that month, and we went to a training. But it was like such an amazing event. I think we got around 30 people out on a Saturday at Christy Pitts, and it was a lot of people's first time introduction to CJTO. And I can see a lot of people who are like really active CJTO members now or kind of were in the past year. That was like how they got involved. Like they came to that. It was just so wild. We played some really silly games. We wanted to have a presentation by this photographer who photographed Indigenous firefighters in Northern Ontario and kind of the realities they face of fighting like increased wildfires due to climate change, but then but then at the same time being their departments being extremely underfunded by the federal government, I guess. And just kind of like that kind of combination when we talk about like the climate crisis and kind of thinking of it more kind of broadly and how it really impacts communities. And we were like, okay, like how do we have a presentation where we showcase people's pictures outside? And so we like ended up at Christie Pitts. There's like the pool, and underneath the pool there's like all these like storage lockers that are not really publicly accessible, but one of our members had the key, and we like showed it in this bunker, and we like all like paraded around Christie Pitts from like the picnic bench into the bunker and just like looked at these presentations. And then afterwards, we, like, came back out, and it just started, like, torrential downpouring on us. And we, like, all went under the pavilion in Christie Pitts and, like, did a canvassing training. And, like, as, like, the waters were literally, like, flooding in Christie Pitts because it's, like, a dome, the waters braked for a second, and then everyone went out and, like, canvassed around the park, and then, like, stormed again. And then everyone just, like, came back. And then we were supposed to do, like, an outdoor barbecue there, but then because it was just, like, such horrible weather, I live kind of close by, and we just kind of all did like a little caravan to my house, kind of like carrying all our supplies, and had a really nice backyard barbecue. And I think that it was such a community building moment, and I think a lot of the kind of like friendships and kind of strong bonds were built then. And so I think when we talk about like activism, like so much of it is about actually the connections you have to your other activists and organizers. And so I think for me that was such a successful event because I feel like our community kind of really came together on that day. I think the other kind of really incredible organizing that happened was this past January with the Wet'suwet'en solidarity actions. To be honest, I wasn't really involved with them, so I can't really talk a lot about it, but I just know that CJTL, like having built our capacity during the federal election and during the September 27th climate strike, was really well positioned in preparing. Like we knew that Wet'suwet'en was probably going to escalate again. That Guardian article came out about how the RCMP was like licensed, like was prepared to like kill land defenders. And so in December, we had started preparing, like we had started making some like posters and had started planning for some direct actions. And then we're kind of waiting for when the call would go out. And then literally CJTO started, we did like a sit-in, I think at Krista Freeland's office first. And then we did a disruption of RBC's headquarters. When we started at Krista Freeland's, there was like zero media attention. There was like nothing at all in the national discourse. And then by the time that the rail blockade started, enough support had started to be built up that it just like took off across Canada and just really blew up everywhere. And then I think CJTO's our kind of like biggest action was when we did Carolyn Bennett's constituency office occupation overnight with young Indigenous land defenders. Were you there?
I was there for the first few hours.
Oh, that's amazing. Like I wasn't even there. I was actually traveling at the time. And yeah, maybe you could talk more about like the energy, but from like the pictures and what I heard about it, it was just super electrifying, super powerful. And I think it's kind of different because we were not actually looking to have like a meeting with Carolyn Bennett. Like we knew what she would say, but it was mostly about kind of making a statement and kind of really putting pressure on the government. And so just like all the trolling that was happening to the government during that time, and kind of like there was like a really great TikTok on her account if you've ever seen it. And so I think that is just like another really incredible action. And so yeah, I think looking at it kind of like the one I first talked about, which was like very kind of like building community, and this one are very really powerful, and kind of how when you build that community and build that capacity, organizing becomes really easy.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Yeah, it's really important to have that community love there, and the kind of know that you have comrades before you kind of start doing these actions and have the capacity to do that. And there's definitely this wide range of actions that CJTO is undertaking, like political education, awareness building, and then to the more kind of direct action activities as well. And I'm curious because all this is the things you were talking about are fairly recent. And then of course, with COVID-19, organizing has had to go online. So it might be interesting for folks to know what online organizing has been like and where CJTO is heading with their online organizing at this point.
CJTO launched, I think, like three different fundraisers that have raised tens of thousands of dollars, I think around $30,000. There was the Frontline Gratitude Fund, which
distributed funds to frontline workers. There was the Black and Indigenous Solidarity Fund that redistributed money to help pay for rent and kind of other essential things to Black and Indigenous folks across Toronto, and was putting priority on those of our membership as well. And then I think we've also done a few different kind of other funders as well. I think that's kind of been the direction that a lot of that our organizing has taken place, because it's a little bit more easier to do than, say, organizing a rally. It's a lot of kind of digital organizing, which I think has been incredibly strong. Like, I think you're part of the DigiComms meeting team, and I went to one meeting. I was like, wow, there's so many people here and they're so excited, and there's like so many projects on the work right now. And I think that is kind of one area. And this is somewhere where I think it's quite challenging. Like, I don't think it's easy to be like, oh yeah, we'll just do digital. We'll just, like, you know, switch and do digital organizing. I think it was quite a challenge and is still quite a challenge. And I would say that we still have a lot to kind of like learn and kind of grapple with, and a lot of kind of institution building. Yeah, like, I've been reading so many documents on like organizational structure. I feel like that's like all I kind of been thinking about, and also like orientation and stuff like that. So it's a lot of kind of like behind the scenes work.
Yeah, almost like a nice time to like focus on those things which might be hard to otherwise, and of course so important to move money around where it needs to be, so fundraising is also so wonderful.
I definitely don't want to like romanticize the pandemic, but no. It did give us a time to be like, okay, like, this is actually like, we're being forced, like, this is like a sign from above, we're being forced to really stop and think about what we're doing, because it was getting to a point where it was really kind of burning people out, and has kind of made us really have to like slow down.
Yeah, great points. And if someone's listening today and they're thinking, oh man, CJTO is so cool, I want to get involved, how would they do that?
Get onto our Slack page, our Slack essentially. So if you go to any of our social medias, you'll find a link tree linked, and on there you'll find our email list. And when you sign up for our email, you'll get an auto-generated email that will send you a link to get onto our Slack page. And from there, you'll be able to find what meetings are happening and kind of what actions are taking place. Keep one eye on Slack, and then also, of course, follow our social media, because I think that's where a lot of amazing resources are being posted right now.
Yeah, and I was wondering if you could maybe mention, there's different pods in CJTO that you can become a part of. I was wondering if maybe you could just list off a few that folks could get involved in, depending on your area of interest.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think some of the main kind of focus areas right now is DigiComms, and so digital communications. And within that, you can work on a podcast like this, you can work on our blog, you can work on our newsletter, you can work on our social media, you can work on our website. You could also then join our action safety channel, which is really focused on how to make actions more safe in Toronto, and then also how to show up for kind of actions and kind of offer our support. You can join our community care team, which is all about making CJTO a safer place for all types of people. And so it does work around like community building, but then also kind of confronting disability injustice and fighting anti-Black racism within our own organization. And there's also the CJTO orientation group, which is working to build an orientation for new members to CJTO. And there's also, of course, the structure team, which I'm mostly part of, which is really focused on that internal structure building. People are always like, oh, I don't know how to get involved, or I don't know if I really have the skills. And really, there's a place for everyone. Like, is there something for everyone to do? And if you feel that there isn't, create it, like, suggest it. And I'm sure other people would want to join you in doing that. Like, I think CJTO is kind of like a group where it's kind of you make what you want to do. And so if there's enough interest, like, a new kind of project can start.
Cool. That's amazing. Thank you so much. And I wanted to end with the question to hear how you got involved with CJTO, and how you were, I guess, what were your journey to activism was, and maybe we can inspire some folks to join us in CJTO.
So I've always been like that environmental kid, like from such a young age, like grade 4, I think I was always kind of that one that cared about the environment, like from like watching Inconvenient Truth from a young age. It was like kind of something that really inspired me. And then I went to this really amazing conference in 2012 when I was 17, which was called PowerShift 2012. And it was kind of the first time I thought I was being taught about thinking about climate change as an issue of like social injustice. How far we've come as a society since then, that like that was like revolutionary in 2012, right? But that was mind-blowing for me to think about like how Indigenous rights were at the forefront of the climate crisis, and like hearing from people who lived in Alberta and the tar sands. And at that same time that I was 17, Idle No More happened. And so I remember I was like, I'm like 17, I like don't know much. I go to this conference with a few of my friends. Like we like are on this like school bus together. We go there. We like ditch school for a week to go to this conference. And then I come back and like Idle No More is happening. And there's like round dances happening across Canada in the city, in the Eden Center. I don't know anyone who does activism. I just know myself. And so I like shyly go by myself and kind of go take part in a round dance. And I remember I met Naomi Klein there at one of those round dances and was just like, oh my gosh, like I'm such a big fan. And Idle No More really shifted the landscape in Canada for Indigenous rights, right? I think a lot happened out of that. And so from there, I kind of went to university and kind of got caught. I feel like I kind of got caught up in the university like sustainability bubble, or in the sense of like just kind of doing things that really tinkered around the problems. I was still pretty new, so I was kind of like just do what is available to you. Looking kind of retroactively back on you, I think about why I did the work that I did, and I think a lot of it is because of the community and like the group that I was part of, which I really loved, which maybe wasn't doing the most life-changing work, but was a super strong community that had potlucks and that people were really kind and we played games together. I feel like my own personal learning was really prioritized. And so the community, I think, is what really stuck me there. And I think thinking back on it, I think that's why organizing has to be so much about relationships and relational organizing, because that is actually what keeps people coming back, right? Is the community, not necessarily like the politics of it. And so eventually I stopped doing that. I was like, because I was feeling really unsatisfied from the work, and I was like, okay, like what am I doing? And I was just kind of like unsure. And then I remember it was, I think, yeah, the summer of 2018, when I was sitting in my apartment, and I was living in Vancouver at the time where I was going to school, and Justin Trudeau came on the news and announced that the Canadian government was purchasing the Kinder Morgan pipeline, the Trans Mountain pipeline extension, and would be like sinking our public funding into it. And I remember just sitting there completely enraged and in shock, and just like sitting in looking out to the mountains and this like kind of landscape, and just feeling this like fire like consume my entire body, just like feeling really hot and just being like, how is this even possible? I was part of that generation in 2015 that was like our first time voting. We voted for the Liberals because we had like been told that that they were going to do something. We had grown up under Stephen Harper and seen like the horrors of conservatism. And so it was just this total slap in the face to me and total kind of like enraging moment. And from then on, I knew that I needed to do something. And I think sometimes people want to tell like stories of like origins. They're like A led to B, then led to C, and then I did the thing, and then this thing happened. But I think a lot of it is kind of like circles, because like I had this really like enraging moment, and then I went on vacation, and then I came back. I moved back to Toronto and was kind of like lost again and didn't know what to do and was kind of just like confused. And so I was kind of felt like my momentum was really kind of like depleted then. But then I went to a conference that was also called Power Shift, but this time run by a different organization, and it was focused solely on young people. So Power Shift Young and Rising. And that happened in the winter of 2019. And that is really where the seeds of CJTO were planted. A lot of us met each other there, or kind of were connected to each other there. And it was a super energetic moment. The Green New Deal was really talked about, you know, uniting these struggles in the climate movement were really talked about. And I remember coming back and being like, okay, like this, I need to do something. And I just like emailed that list of people I had and be like, hey, like, does anyone want to meet? Like, I feel like the NDP was in town to do like a town hall. And I was like, I really feel like we should go bird dog this town hall and like tell Jagmeet Singh that we really need a Green New Deal. And then like two people replied to me on that email. And then but I was like, okay, that's like two more people than ever before. And so then we met up and then we did this action. And I was like, wow, that was so easy. Like he just responded to us and said that, yeah, they would do a Green New Deal. Like what? Like, how is it that easy? Then we connected with people who are doing Fight for 15 and fairness work, who are doing like work within the climate caucus there to try to really bring decent work and the climate movement together. And it was just like this incredibly energizing moment. It was like this, like it felt like in a global context, climate was really talked about, like with Greta and then AOC in the South, and in South America there was like the Chilean protest, in Hong Kong like the protest, like there was just like a, I feel like a really big buzz of like of activism in the world at that time. And so I remember March, April, May of that of 2019 just being so exciting, and just like going to all the events and like meeting young people and being like, hey, we should do things. And then CJTO, we were not even CJTO, we were just kind of like this like WhatsApp group. We're kind of meeting once a month, kind of like to test the waters of what we wanted to do. And then from that, CJTO was born, and we did stuff in the election, and then did stuff with Wet'suwet'en, and that's kind of how I landed to where I am today. And I think that what really kind of like the overall message for me was that like anyone can organize, like literally you just need, I think, two other people. Like if you have three people, you can do something. And like we are stronger together, and your power builds as you build, as you get more people, and you can do bigger actions and kind of more targeted actions. There's all these organizing theories and books and whatever, but you can learn them as you go. I think it's really the passion and the drive and the intention to do good in this world that I think is really all you need to organize.
That's such a great message to leave this off of. Anyone can organize and finding your place in the movement. And there's places everywhere for, you know, whatever you have to offer. That's so great. And I'm glad we also got to hear the origin story of CJTO by asking you how you got involved. It was a double win. but that's great. Thank you so much, Nicholas, for being on our first episode of CJTO Radio. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, yeah, I think this is an incredible experience. I think there's so many great organizers within CJTO that I've met that have really taught me so much. I remember I saw this quote before that was like, you don't just like educate people and hope they get organized. It's like you actually learn by organizing, by actually doing the work. That's when you like learn about different politics and why migrant rights are really important. And like, and I think if you just like talk at someone, you're not really going to learn much. But it's about getting someone, doing an action together, debriefing it, talking about how it could be better, talk about how, oh, have you considered this, have you thought about this kind of analysis, and really building that capacity together through like mutual respect of another person, being like, just because you don't know this thing doesn't mean that you're less of a human, it means that you're just not there yet. And then together, like, I'm committed to take you on this journey, and we're going to learn together. And I think that is so much about what organizing is.
Thanks. That's such a great place to leave it off today. And thanks, Nicholas. I'm sure we'll have you back on here sometime.
Thanks, Alex. And thanks, everyone who's organizing this. I'm excited to listen to the rest of the episode and kind of see what is talked about beyond just my voice.
nothing beyond your voice.
Welcome to our segment called Temp Check.
This is where we'll give you the rundown of current events in our community, powerful movements around the world, and a different call to action each episode for our listeners to participate.
For our February news, Joe Biden revoked the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline, leaving oil lover Justin Trudeau very disappointed. The cancellation of this pipeline needs to be the first of many. We hope that a Green New Deal is next on the list of climate action priorities.
Meanwhile, Enbridge's Line 3 pipeline is being built across Anishinaabe land in so-called Minnesota. The building of this pipeline is a threat to the land, water, and the health, safety, and sovereignty of Indigenous nations. Check out @resist_line_3 on Instagram for more updates.
In Delhi, India, the largest organized strike in history is taking place as over 250 million farmers and workers protest Modi's right-wing government's new agricultural laws that will privatize agricultural business and strip away crucial protections for farmers. We need protections for workers now. Check out @justice4, as in the number, Indian Farmers TO on Instagram for more information and updates.
On January 14th, the Ontario government issued a temporary eviction ban, which only lasted 2 weeks and still allowed for eviction orders to be issued. This is unacceptable, and we need affordable and emergency housing, rent forgiveness, and for evictions to be taken off the table completely during COVID-19. Check out at Keep Your Rent on Instagram for more updates.
We're calling on John Tory to defund the police by 50% and invest in community support and services. Sign the open letter at surgetoronto.com/defund. That's surgetoronto.com/defund. And keep updated with @surge_Toronto on Instagram.
Our call to action this week is to advocate for paid sick days. At any time, and especially during a pandemic, workers need to have protections and livable wages. Let's make sure politicians hear our voices on the streets and online to bring back this crucial protection without any more delay. If you haven't yet, please take a moment now to sign the petition at 15infairness.org/COVID-19_help_now. This petition gets sent electronically to your local provincial leader and Prime Minister Trudeau.
And on May 21st, wherever you are, whenever you can, speak out for paid sick days. We'll be sharing the actions of 15 in Fairness supporters like yourself throughout the day on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So follow and post with the hashtag #PaidSickLeaveSavesLives to be a part of this important conversation. More information on how you can participate can be found on 15andfairness.org. I think it's time to sing.
Music and songs have been a crucial tool to help build power within social movements throughout history.
So every episode, we'll be teaching a powerful song that's used to unite movements and to inspire the masses. Today's song is...
People Gonna Rise Like the Water.
Will you sing it with me?
Yeah.
All right, let's go line by line. The people gonna rise like the water. We're gonna calm this crisis down. Your turn.
The people gonna rise like the water. We're gonna calm this crisis down.
Nice. I hear the voice of my great-granddaughter saying, keep it in the ground. Your turn.
I hear the voice of my great-granddaughter saying, keep it in the ground.
Killing it. Now we do the same thing again. The people gonna rise like the water. We're gonna calm this crisis down. I hear the voice of my great-granddaughter saying, keep it in the ground. Together.
The people gonna rise like the water. We're gonna calm this crisis down.
I hear the voice of my great-granddaughter saying, keep it in the ground. Amazing job!
Now you know a powerful tune you can teach your family, friends, or even bring to your next Zoom meeting.
Thanks for singing with us. We'll see you next time.
The people gonna rise like the water. We're gonna calm this crisis down. I hear the voice of my great-granddaughter saying, keep it in the ground. The people gonna rise like the water. Voice of my great-granddaughter saying, keep it in the ground.
Climate Justice Radio is produced by Climate Justice Toronto. This episode featured original music by Stefan Hegret, editing by Bella Line and Stefan Hegret. The host for today's episode was Alexandra Simpson with special guest Nicholas Argawal. News content and sing-along by Chloe Letterman and Savvy Galatly Ladd.
We also like to give a big shout-out to CJRU, who aired this episode first on 1280 AM.
You can find us on Twitter at CJusticeTO, on Instagram at ClimateJusticeTO, and on Facebook at ClimateJusticeTO. You can also sign up to join Climate Justice Toronto on Action Network. That's actionnetwork.org/forms/joinCJTO. You can also find all these links in the description below.
Thanks for listening, folks. Remember to hit that subscribe button for more great Climate Justice Radio episodes. Yours in solidarity, CJTO.